Thank you, Steve Bertrand. This is John Williams at 136 on WGN Radio. Kim Fox, the Cook County State's Attorney, is on a phone line. Kim, it's John. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm good, John. Good afternoon.
I know you've had a whirlwind of tours. You're trying to answer as many questions as possible, and we appreciate you making some time for us today. Since we've all been talking about and watching those interviews and listening to them, I have my own little set of questions in front of me.
Sure.
So while this might seem a little random, I hope you'll just kind of bear with me. The first question I have is, was this a plea agreement or did you drop charges? And is there a distinction? We visited with Jesse's attorney the other day, and he said this is no plea agreement. They didn't have a good enough case and dropped charges. Would you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, let me first do the caveat that I was not involved in the arrangement. I had recused myself back in February. So my first assistant, Joe Magatz, negotiated with Mr. Smollett's team the terms of the agreement. We had a strong case. To be clear, you know, not just in this case, but in other cases, any time that the state is asking someone to do something in condition of dismissing charges, they can only do that ethically if they believe that the case was strong. We can't ask an innocent person to forfeit their bond. You can't ask an innocent person to do community service. And so the semantics that apparently their attorneys are using is interesting. What I know, and having spoken to Joe, was that Mr. Smollett's case charges were dropped in exchange for his bond forfeiture and community service.
And talk to me a little bit about that community service. Who made that deal? When was it made? What are the very specifics of it? Can you talk about that?
John, I can't, like I said, Joe Magatz, who was our first assistant, negotiated that. And so I know, you know, in broad strokes that he had done a couple days of community service here in Chicago and some other community service, I believe, back out west. But I can't tell you the specifics of that because, again, I was recused from the case.
You don't know the details of that?
I didn't inquire of the details of that. Again, I was recused.
But I'm sorry, Kim, but you haven't since? I mean, as we sit here now, you don't know the details of how that deal was worked out?
No.
I'm surprised by that. Aren't you curious?
No. I mean, I think part of the reason that I had done the recusal was to make sure that whatever happened in that case was done without the influence of me. And since the news has broken and the information of the last couple of days have gotten out, I've been more focused on how do we talk about how alternative prosecution and diversion work overall.
Okay, hold on.
And how people are able to participate in that. But no, I have not gotten into the weeds of how that was negotiated.
I'm going to ask maybe a question with a similar, you'll get a similar answer, but
sure.
Have you asked Joe why? I mean, it seems to me that typically when someone enters into this sort of a deal, they're prohibited from proclaiming their innocence when they leave. Why wasn't that part of this negotiated process?
I didn't ask Joe that, but I can tell you in broader strokes, again, there's the different ways that we do diversion. One way we do it is that someone pleads guilty and they are asked to do certain conditions. So maybe it's restitution or community service or some other type of engagement. Maybe if they have a drug issue, drug treatment, they're given time.
But I understand all that, but I'm just wondering why he's allowed to come out and badmouth you and your office when he entered into a deal for committing a crime.
I mean, that's a question that I can't answer for him. I think Joe looked at the various ways in which he could negotiate this, why he chose to allow him to do it this way. Again, he can't ask him to do something if he didn't think that he was guilty. And Mr. Smollett and his team obviously are trying to spin this in their client's best interest.
Have you asked Joe why he didn't get that part of the deal? And I only ask because, and I know you were recused, but this goes, I think, to the integrity of your office. So I would imagine you would be asking your first deputy why and how these decisions were made. I mean, you're the one who's got to be out here defending them now.
Yes, certainly, and I take no issue with that. What I was trying to explain earlier is there are circumstances where someone does not have to enter a guilty plea and can still do the conditions and have the case dropped. This is a Class 4 felony, which is our lowest level felony, where those types of negotiations happen. So there are times where people have allocution where they say, I did it, and then do something, and we vacate the conviction and drop the charges. And there are other circumstances where they've done what is asked of them that's been negotiated, and we drop the charges.
You've used the term recuse a couple of times here, and I've heard you say you were speaking legally, but also at other times you were speaking colloquially. When you recused yourself, what did that mean?
So what that meant was that we put what we would call a wall around any information that was given to me. So we sent a memo from my chief ethics officer to anyone who was involved in the reviewing of the case, because, again, this was pre-charging back in February. So all of the assistants in felony review, Joe Magatz, my first assistant, April Perry, my chief ethics officer, and I believe there are four or five other assistants who were on that. And in that email, it says that any information related to the investigation of Jussie Smollett would be cordoned off from me. They were not to talk to me or seek any decisions from me related to the case.
So you were in the dark. You were reading about this in the Tribune the way I was.
Yes.
And so does that mean, pardon me, Steve, I'll let you finish that thought, but I want to ask this, though. So you had no control over that. For instance, a lot of us are wondering why, if Smollett is essentially saying, okay, I did the crime, I'll do the community service, I'll forfeit my bond, but you'll drop the charges, why wasn't part of that agreement that he would also apologize to the police of the city of Chicago? I think that would have gone a long way for a lot of people.
I certainly understand that. Again, but to answer the first part of your question, I did not have any control over that. I exited this case on February, I believe it was 13th.
Were you surprised when the terms were revealed to all of us that he didn't have to even apologize?
I don't know about surprise. I've seen.
How about disappointed?
I've seen other cases like this get the charges dropped, also in disorderlies where that's not necessarily a condition. And so I don't know if the word was surprise. It was, there were terms that...
Are you disappointed? Kim, are you disappointed? Do you wish that Jussie had apologized?
You know, I think Jussie knows what he did, and I think what his actions did to the city as a whole, I think would... An apology should be forthcoming. I would agree with that.
Steve Bertrand?
Well, I want to know what you're learning from your first deputy post decision. And so you said you were in the dark when the decision was made. So does that mean that you found out at the same time that Superintendent Johnson found out? I mean, they didn't.
No, I found out just before.
They said that we've got this resolved and we're doing it in court.
Yes, I found out just before.
Tell me,
do you think it was a mistake not to at least give a heads? You know, because you got to know people were going. The heads were going to be.
Tell us, you yelled at him about this. Come on, I mean, so are you satisfied the fact that Superintendent Johnson seemed to be blindsided by this?
Listen, I've spoken to Superintendent Johnson a number of times since this decision was made, and certainly expressed to him that traditionally this is not the method in which our offices communicate with one another. But I also want to be clear, you know, Joe Magatz made the decision based on the facts and the law, and it doesn't behoove me to attack his decision making. What I can say is that, you know, we do have alternative prosecution and diversion in cases just like this. How he negotiated this particular case, I was not a part of. But part of this office's mandate is, in low-level offenses like this, to offer the possibility of diversion rather than going to court. And we've done that in cases exactly like this, involving disorderly conduct.
Have you found other instances? How many times have you found instances where an agreement like this was reached, the charges are dropped?
We looked at the numbers, and we can give you additional numbers as we dig down deeper.
My understanding is it's just a couple that you sent a memo out to your assistants, and we really don't have much evidence of that.
Let me first back it up. We were looking for specific instances like this case. But to go back for a moment, 48% of our Class 4 felonies with first-time offenders, 48% of those cases are dismissed. And those dismissals also include parts of diversion programs. What we were asking for, because people were asking, and I totally understand the curiosity and wanting to know how this happens, are for those specific cases in which the charges were dropped without an admission of guilt. And so the assistants on the ground, because those cases are already dropped and closed, would be in a better position to go back to their records.
I understand that.
To the file.
State Attorney Fox, can you explain for me, because I don't understand yet, what happened in court today, and is there not ever going to be an expungement? And it seems as if the judge in the case said that the records would maybe be sealed but never destroyed. Can you explain the proceedings today?
I was not in court today. My understanding in court today was that the court file was sealed, and that sealing was part of the statute that allows for the court file to be sealed. We don't have the authority to unseal the file.
Well, not the criminal record, but you can't ask for the case file to be unsealed.
According to Chief Judge Martin, we cannot ask for the file to be unsealed.
You have no leverage here. You have no tool to unseal that.
According to Judge Martin, we do not have the ability to ask for that to be unsealed.
The mayor was on our radio station today with Steve Cochran. Ro, let's play what the mayor said he wants to happen on WGN.
First,
yeah,
the police are right now finalizing the cost that was used of police resources to come to the understanding that in fact this was a hoax and not a real hate
crime.
Total
taxpayer dollars.
What we spent.
They want to know what we spent, and then they want Jussie Smollett to pay that. What is your thought about that?
I think that's a reasonable request. I mean, the $10,000 that he forfeited in exchange for the charges being dropped was the maximum allowable that we were able to get, but it does not absolve him of any responsibility to the city.
So does the city have civil recourse? Can they sue Jussie for the costs?
I believe that their corporation counsel could answer that better, but it's my understanding that they could.
Here again, so you said you recused yourself, so now we got to find Joe McGatt and ask him these questions. But it would seem to me like an apology and better compensation for the city's costs would be in order here. You understand that people are frustrated by that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do understand that, but compensation for the city's costs would, again, the statute that we were operating under for disorderly conduct, the maximum for restitution is $10,000. So even here in Cook County, I could not, if that were part of it, negotiate something outside of the statute. And so certainly Joe can explain that to you, but the maximum would have been $10,000, which again would not absolve the city at all of being able to recoup their costs for Mr. Smollett.
I want to ask you a couple of questions about the future. You know, the police are angry with you, and the Fraternal Order of Police will be protesting against you, the state's attorney, coming up on Monday. Your institution and the police department have to work together. I just wonder what you make of being protested against by police officers.
You know, we are an independent agency that works with Chicago Police. Again, we have a healthy respect for the work that they do and that they've done, not just on this case, but others. And so, you know, the choices that the Fraternal Order of Police make in terms of their membership, I have no control over. What I will say is that there's been a lot of focus on this one Class 4 felony, but every single day our assistants are working with Chicago Police dealing with some of the most heinous violence in this city. And I think we need to be reminded that as we talk about this one case, that we have a homicide rate that we need to get under control, that we have violence and gun violence in our streets that we need to work on. And certainly it is our belief that the Chicago Police Department share our concern about dealing with the violence in this city, and that certainly one Class 4 felony that was disposed of, like 48% of the other Class 4 felonies, would not preclude them from being able to do their job.
You had the dubious distinction now of making the president's Twitter feed. And are you concerned at all about what an FBI or Justice Department review of your office and your handling of this case might reveal?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Do you welcome that?
I have no reason to believe that there was anything that was done inappropriately here. I want to be very clear. Everything that we did in this case, from the moment that I talked to the victim's family, when he was deemed a victim, the moment that it became clear, and I do it all the time, I talk to victims and their families all the time. The moment that it became clear that this investigation was shifting, I made steps by creating a wall with our first ever chief ethics officer, who came to us directly from the U.S. Attorney's Office to ensure that the integrity of this investigation would remain solid. I stand behind that. I also stand behind Joe McGatz and his decision on how to resolve this case. We resolve thousands of cases every year, and the men and women of this office deserve to have their work acknowledged. And if this one case is going to be the lens by which we judge the work of this office, I find that unfortunate.
I think it's the lens by which people will judge your office.
Well, we should say, too, that Joe McGatz is a long-time prosecutor, right? This wasn't a rookie situation, right?
No, 29 years. I'm his fifth state's attorney.
Okay, but
this is a veteran prosecutor.
No, nobody's arguing that. Kim, I don't think the problem is with him, and I don't think, although it may be, but I don't think it's the problem with the people that do the day-to-day work over there. But to be clear then, you're telling us that you had no directive to Joe to settle. You had no directive on the terms of this.
I could not. I want to be clear. I recused myself on February 13th.
And had no oversight and no more knowledge than anybody else listening to the radio.
No, and I think what's important is it's either you recuse yourself or you don't. And when I made the recusal, it wasn't under the public eye. I think people found out about it a week later, I think February 20th, but I had done it February 13th. Before there was any persons of interest that they had in custody, before any interrogations had happened, before the bulk of that investigation had been completed, I had recused myself.
Well, when those family members reached out to you, the case was already a little fishy to a lot of people. I almost wish maybe you do now, too, that while Jussie was the victim here, quote unquote, maybe Jussie wasn't. And perhaps it would have been a good idea not to take that call, not to open up or agree to any communication with somebody representing his family.
What I would tell you is to go back to February 1st, which is when I took that call. Superintendent Johnson on February 1st was on WLS TV talking about this case. And Superintendent Johnson that morning said, Jussie Smollett is a victim. And at this time, I have no reason to believe that he is not being genuine.
I understand that. That's sure. Sure he said that.
Oh, yeah, he did. He did that.
Okay. I have a question about the clerk's system. If I typed in now to search the records, at least earlier today, it comes up empty. No records, no results. Has that changed? Will that change?
I don't know because I haven't seen the clerk system.
Okay. Well, you understand why I'm asking that. People are wondering what access they can actually have to a file or a case.
Yeah, that's a question for the clerk's office. I don't know the answer to that.
This came up also earlier in the Mincing Rascals podcast, but were you surprised by the outcry?
People keep asking me that. I don't really know the answer to it. I am surprised to the extent that it has gotten as big as it has. We had a case a couple weeks ago where a woman falsely accused a black man in Grant Park of stabbing her in the stomach. And I know she's not famous. I know it didn't get the type of attention, but we've seen things like this before. The media's attention on this case was a surprise. But I think people who don't get to see, like I do, the inside baseball, you know, this being a Class 4 feels bigger. But again, I'm in the work. I'm in the lead.
I'm glad you brought that up, because what happened to that woman? Was she charged?
Not yet.
So she made a false police report, as Smollett did, but she hasn't been charged yet.
Yeah, but a dozen cops, there weren't a dozen investigators working on that case for 3 weeks. There weren't 50-plus police or surveillance videos looked at. So I think these are apples and oranges when we talk about other class fours.
I would disagree with you, and I would disagree in that I think every case, and I think Superintendent Johnson said that, you know, every case is significant, and the police resources that are expended, whether it's a disorderly conduct or whether it's a shooting, it has a cost to all of us. And so when we start weighing, you know, which class four is heavier than the other, how many resources were spent on one case versus another, that's not how our justice system functions. And so I think in this case, the difference isn't the expenditure of resources. I think the difference is the attention that this case got. And it was a national case. And so I think because it was a national case, because so many people were watching, and because this was a glimpse into our justice system and a piece of it that we don't often see, which is negotiations before a trial. And to your point, a disappointment that people didn't see Mr. Smollett accept guilt for his actions that have gotten this to be a lot of the attention.
And there you were, recused and unable to steer any of that. When you discovered what those terms were you disappointed in the decisions that your first lieutenant made?
I support my first assistant, a 29-year veteran of this office, in his experience in having made that decision.
Kim, I have one last question for you. What do you think happened that night, January 29th at 2 a.m. near the Subway sandwich shop?
I'm not in a position to speculate as to what happens. If I were in a courtroom, there'd be an objection calling for speculation. So the lawyer in me cannot speculate as to what happened that night.
That breaks with most other law enforcement officials in the city, though, right? I mean, the police superintendent says he did it. The mayor certainly says he did it.
The brother's attorney said they did it.
Your first deputy says he did it.
You asked me what happened that night, and when what did it means? I can't tell you what that means, and I'm not in a position to speculate about that. Gentlemen, I understand the concern of the people as to what happened in this case. I do, and the recusal that I made on February 13th, based on the information that was brought before me, required that I not engage in this case beyond that point. And again, I believe the recusal was done at my request. No one asked me to. I did not want to jeopardize the integrity of the investigation. And that means all the way through, not to second-guess the choices that I was not privileged or had privy to make, and not to undermine the work of a 29-year veteran who made that call. And I'll take the heat. You're absolutely right. This is my office. Joe works for me. I will accept that. But I'm not going to be in a position of second-guessing someone who made a decision based on the facts and the evidence that was presented before him.
Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. Any last comments for the city today, Kim? I sure appreciate your time. These were some of the questions we had. Any last thing you want to say that maybe we didn't ask about?
No, I thank you for your time. I think it's really important that we talk about alternative prosecution. I think, you know, one of the things that this has taught me is that a lot of people in our city don't realize that outside of the traditional court process, we have a very robust diversion program that needs more attention so people can understand what's possible. And then lastly, you know, I am committed to the safety of this city. Public safety is our primary goal. And again, it is important for me to support the work of the people who do this work in the office and our law enforcement partners on the street. This is one case of the 40,000 cases we'll have this year, and I'm confident in the ability of both the police and the Cook County State's Attorney's Office to keep our community safe.
Kim Fox, thank you for your time. Steve?
I was just going to say thank you, Kim, for taking the questions, because we weren't always very polite, and I appreciate your answers.
I'm okay. I have four teenagers at home. No one's ever polite. I appreciate it, gentlemen.
That's Kim Fox. So I guess our next conversation has to be with Joe McGapp. It's 2 o'clock. Okay, so it just turned 2. You heard the beep. Steve, I got to play a couple commercials. We'll start the news a little late. This is WGN.